Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into a Monday morning edition of the Bet the Board podcast powered by Bet Online here on October 10th. Oh, how we missed you, our loyal listeners. The unforeseen postponement coming as a byproduct of Hurricane Matthew, which ripped through the Miami area. I'm your host, Todd Furman. We'll be joined in a matter of seconds by the man who had to deal with the hurricane firsthand. But either way, Payne, I have a feeling your Monday morning has to be going better than the former offensive coordinator of the Baltimore Ravens, Mark Trestman, who was let go. Oddly enough, this last time the Ravens let an offensive coordinator go to start the season, they just happened to get all the way to the Super Bowl.
I definitely am not getting deported back to Canada. You have to wonder if Trump had anything to kind of do with this Trestman thing, getting him back across the border or not. But yes, much better now on Monday morning. Dealt with Hurricane Matthew. Thank God that is out of the way and hurricane season is almost over here in Florida.
So what's hurricane preparation look like down there? Like, walk us through a bit of what you have to do to make sure your stable of like 25 luxury automobiles, your beachfront estate, that everything is taken care of so you don't have to come home to carnage.
The problem there is the water situation. And we've kind of talked about this a little bit under this new health regimen. And I'm drinking like 200 ounces a day. I'm pissing more than your grandmother. But the water scarcity was the issue. I was like loading up, went to like 10 different places, finally found a gas station that had like a $2 for $4 thing on smart water. And I must have bought like 100 of them. The lady at the gas station looked at me weird. I tipped her. She helped me bring them to the car and stuff. So the water is the issue. And the gas thing is kind of funny. You'll see a bunch of people on the roads at like 4 a.m. trying to get gas. So there isn't like a 10-hour wait just to get gasoline.
Have we thought about like adding an actual filtration system to one of your sinks?
Have that.
And that's not good enough? You still need smart water on top of it?
I like my smart water.
My God, you are a product of marketing genius from the folks at Smart Water promising you electrolytes and whatever the hell other crap.
We should probably try to get a sponsor. There's got to be someone listening from Smart Water. Either that or Tito's.
I'm open for any alcohol distributor, whether it's a microbrew, whether it's a distillery, Smart Water. We are always open to sponsorship suggestions. And since we know we have loyal listeners who want to make sure we put food on the table, hey, if you guys have ideas, feel free to email us at bettheboardpodcast.com, which you should be checking out anyways. Hopefully you folks were able to read the blog, get a relatively comfortable winner on the Buffalo Bills in lieu of the podcast that we weren't able to record last week. As always, the big game breakdown today. Later in the show will be brought to you by the American Gaming Association. And if you're looking to support the podcast, check out all the gambling swag available there. Some great t-shirts just in time for the holidays, limited supplies while they last.
Payne, can I say one thing here really quick?
Yeah, go ahead. You're always able to jump in. I mean, I'm not going to listen, but you can jump in anyways.
I was shocked how many Todd Furman-like human beings there are out there in the world. There were a lot of readers of this pod blog, so to speak. We didn't have the podcast, obviously.
Hold on one second.
Stunned to see how many were willing to read.
You make it sound like reading is a bad thing, and somehow it's a debilitating habit or something that you try and incorporate into your daily life. You make it sound like it's a bad thing.
We're kind of in like the ADD society right now where nobody has time. Everybody's on their phones. And for me, I literally, and I kind of always say this, I just don't have time for anything this time of year. So just hunkering down and picking up a book or reading, I'm reading box scores. I'm reading player quotes. Coaches quotes, that's about it. No time for anything else.
All right, well, I'm not telling you to sit down during the fall and decide that you need to read War and Peace on the side to try and further your education of international literature. So let's not go that far. We come to the blog. Although the prose that you put in there, the joint product from the two of us, I mean, it may have at least been written at like a third or fourth grade level.
Yeah, getting better.
So, you know, mild improvements. We're not quite into mid-season form yet, so you have to take the good with the bad, which, Payne, obviously leads us to an assessment of where a lot of these teams are at. And I know it's cliche, it's been done before, the whole pretender-contender game, but wanted to get your thoughts on a number of teams. And I think it makes sense to start in the AFC, where we know there's two teams that are that much better than everybody else in the Patriots and Steelers. Don't think I'm going out on a limb with a surprise calling those two teams a cut above. Would be absolutely shocked, barring injury, if they're not the AFC representative in the Super Bowl. But when we look in the AFC West, two teams tied atop the division. Oakland guts out a victory against the Chargers on Sunday. Denver, I'm not sure what that performance was from Paxton Lynch against the Atlanta Falcons, but are these teams pretenders or contenders through five games of the season?
Denver is a contender, no question. What scares me, though, is come playoff time, starts to get a little cold, starts to get a little windy in the Mile High territory, you're going to have to be able to stop the run. And right now, they kind of have that jelly donut feeling defensively. I think you kind of make a play at Terrence Knighton. I know he's fizzled out his last few stops, but I think he can kind of revitalize his career in a place he's had his most success. So Denver, a definite contender. Oakland, I'm sorry, they're a pretender. Two wins by a point. Kind of luck boxed into one yesterday. You're gifted 14 points off turnovers. The Chargers can't handle a snap on a field goal. They don't go for it on fourth and inches in this must-win game. You kind of look at the success Melvin Gordon had, 4.2 yards per carry, and you kick it when you need an inch. The Raiders, still negative yards per play before yesterday as a net overall, and they were outgained again yesterday by San Diego.
And Oakland's a team that we'll talk about in greater detail for their big division showdown against Kansas City. We'll do that on Thursday, most likely. But you mentioned the Raiders. Can this team, I mean, I want to talk to you a little bit about from a power rating perspective. Have you upgraded, have you downgraded Oakland since the season started? Or, despite their 4-1 record, is Oakland exactly the team you thought they would be coming into 2016?
Well, I had to upgrade them just a touch, simply because I had to see it first. I was down on the Raiders in comparison to a lot of people's power ratings. That's first and foremost. And I think a lot of people were. You know, they just got steamed against the opening game. You saw a Saints team that nobody was high on go from, you know, roughly a pick 'em out to a 2.5-point favorite. So I felt like my power number was really in line to start the season. I have upgraded it a touch because I was lower than most.
Oh, that makes sense. And when we talk about power ratings, there was a team yesterday who arguably put together one of the most complete efforts and impressive performances at all of Sunday, who saw major money against them in the market in the form of the Dallas Cowboys. Do we buy Dallas in this current state as a viable contender, not only for the NFC East, but maybe to be a dark horse threat to win the entire conference if this defense continues to get protected by an offense consistently eating up clock and putting together long, sustained drives?
Gulp, contender.
Wow, I did not see that coming. I definitely did not see that coming.
I love some old school football. It's the best offensive line. You have the leading rusher. Regardless of what you think about Romo or Dak being better, you know, they've done this with Dez out. A slew of defensive components are missing, and they're atop the division. Two big tests ahead, Green Bay, Philadelphia. You get a split there and you remain in the contender category. If you lose both, probably have to downgrade you a notch. It'll be interesting to see it. No Dallas reports came out this week. Romo will be inserted back as soon as he's healthy. They're thinking after the bye week. It'll be interesting to see.
You agree with that decision? I know we don't like to play Monday morning quarterback and pretend that we're GMs because that's not part of our job. Do you agree that Romo, regardless of when he gets healthy and what Dallas has done, say, for example, they enter on a five-game winning streak, do you make Romo the starting quarterback or do you wait for the team to lose for fear of potentially losing a locker room?
Well, I think it just means that you get to wait until he's 100% healthy. We've seen in years past, it's like rush him back, make sure he's just capable enough to kind of play football. Now you wait until he's 110% healthy. And I do. I think you go back to him, but it becomes an easy flip of the switch. I think Dak knows at this point, hey, I just have to be ready. I get the situation. He's smart enough that says we're going to put Romo in here, and God forbid he gets injured again or he stinks through two or three games. It's quickly back to Dak. And things will run smoothly again.
That's what I was going to ask. Do you think Romo has a shorter leash than usual if he struggles for a game or two? Because the one thing for the Cowboys, we know Romo is going to push the envelope a little bit. He's going to create big plays in the passing game, but he's not going to be as conscious of protecting the football. And with the current state of the defense, which has been improved, much like we saw 2 years ago, they've really benefited just by simply not being on the field. Do we feel that Romo may not provide the perfect recipe if he's turning the ball over, creating short fields for the opposition?
See, that's the interesting component to this, is right now in the regular season, you can kind of play conservatively. Once everybody gets good and you're in the playoffs and you're playing elite other teams, you need the guy that takes you to another level. And I think the conservative approach makes those games much tougher. There's not a lot of room for error. And I think Romo has that ability. Listen, you know, a couple years ago, you go into Lambeau Field, and you probably should win that game. I'm not sure that's a game Dak can kind of put a team on his shoulders and win for you. So I think you need the ceiling to be a touch higher when it comes to playoff football and you're facing better competition.
Well, I have to imagine next week when Dallas does go to Lambeau that Dak will make some better throws than what we saw out of Eli Manning last night, despite the fact the Giants were able to miraculously, you know, depending on your number, either cover as a 7.5-point dog or push that number at 7. The only remaining unbeaten team in the NFL, paying the Minnesota Vikings, point differential plus 56. Defensively, they've been outstanding. Sam Bradford doing what's asked of him. I think I know this answer to this question, but have to ask anyways. Vikings, pretender or contender?
Contender. And you know, yesterday when you look at what they did to Houston, basically just dismantled them. And this is a tough team right now for sharp guys to handicap for the fact that coming into yesterday's game, they were a net negative overall in yards per play. It was a tenth of a yard, but they were still a net negative in that. But you have 5 wins already. You look at the schedule, there's 4 games left against the Bears, Jaguars, and Colts. The key here, though, is they're doing it with a bad offensive line. And at some point, it scares me a little bit. Sam Bradford, you're going to have to keep him upright. He made a fantastic throw yesterday. They're up 14-0 at midfield, 3rd and 7. He takes one right in the chin, completes it. They go down, make it a 3-score game. But if they get home field advantage throughout, watch out.
Now, this is a team, and I know we pick on some of the math guys out there all the time. They do things a little bit differently when it comes to handicapping. Is this going to be the poster child from a team that mathematically never lines up with power ratings, but odds makers are forced to respect? I don't want to quite create the parallel to Carolina last year, but we feel like we've seen professional money against the Vikings every week thus far. And as you mentioned, their advanced metrics don't suggest they should be 6 or 7 point favorites on a regular basis. But then you go out there and you watch, you see the defense make plays, the offense take advantage of short fields, that the eyes tell you something very different from the advanced data.
Well, I think from a market perception standpoint, the books feel very fortunate. Minnesota doesn't have a ton of public perception because last year you look 13-2 against the spread. They're doing it again this season. And so I don't think the books are getting absolutely killed. I know it hurt this week. They're starting to garner that public perception. But when you look at Minnesota, yesterday was a weird game from this standpoint. There was a very sharp group on Minnesota. There were other sharp bettors that were taking the 7 with Houston. It closes 6. So there was a difference of opinions between groups on this Minnesota Vikings team. When you looked at yesterday's game, identical in net yards per play between Houston and Minnesota. And that's the reason once it got to 7, it just wasn't going to hold despite a very, very sharp group laying it with Minnesota.
Well, and I think you mentioned how the market hasn't quite responded to Minnesota's dominance. Unheard of in this day and age in the NFL for a team to be 29-9 against the spread their last 38 games. Just think about that for a second. Blindly betting the Vikings would line your pockets with plenty of holiday cash, and I don't remember a team that's put together that type of run of point spread dominance in quite some time. A team really catching everybody's eyes, and they've drawn sharp money for what feels like 4 straight weeks now. The Atlanta Falcons, they go into Denver, knock the Broncos from the ranks of the unbeaten. Very workmanlike effort from Matt Ryan and company. We see Tevin and Coleman and Devontae Freeman have a field day running and catching out of the backfield. You mentioned earlier, and we talked about the Broncos, a little bit soft up the middle. Atlanta takes advantage of that. But defensively, for the first time all season, and maybe in 2 years, they were able to put pressure on the opposing quarterback. I don't know if I give the Falcons defense credit for it or if this was more Paxton Lynch struggling in his first career NFL start.
This Falcons team is very interesting because a lot of professionals did not like them before the season, went under their win total. And as you alluded to, they're catching money in the market many of the last few weeks. If we're talking legitimate shot to win the Super Bowl, I still have to put them in the pretender category. Regardless of who wins tonight, they are two games up in the South, so they could be hosting a playoff game. They still can't get after the quarterback. I'm kind of treating yesterday's performance of six sacks against what appeared to be a Paxton Lynch who had concrete in his cleats as kind of an anomaly. The sample size over the last two seasons, you just can't ignore that in terms of getting pressure on the quarterback. They had just three sacks the first 4 weeks, and you have to get after the quarterback. I do like what they've done with the offensive line. You know, Matt Ryan's had pressure in his face for years. You go get Alex Mack at center. Huge addition. The two-headed system at tailback, it's scary good. I can change my mind, though, 7 days from now if you go on the road to Seattle, who had a bye, and you come away with a win.
And I think Seattle's a team I had on the list. Don't think it's really discussing them in great detail because I'd be shocked if you didn't see them as a viable contender with Russell Wilson having a chance to heal up. You mentioned the big game this week against Atlanta. But the team we saw last night on Sunday Night Football, no, not the New York Giants who have disappointed offensively, Green Bay. They scored 23 points, struggled to convert a lot of prolonged drives into sevens, taking countless field goals, mustering 23 points coming out of the bye. The current state of the Packers, and yes, we know they can improve, is this team a realistic contender for the NFC crown, or are they merely pretenders right now in pretty uniforms, hidden with a lot of their mistakes and I don't know what best way to put it, but a lot of their imperfections hidden by Aaron Rodgers.
This is a tough one. I really like the improvements on defense when Sham Shields comes back. I think without a doubt it's a top 10 defensive unit in terms of efficiency. You have to love the home field advantage, but something feels funny here, so I'm going to go with pretender right now. There's something going on internally. Rodgers doesn't look himself. Last night, he completes that last ball to Cobb to end the game. If it's incomplete, he finishes under a 50% completion rate. That would have been just the second time for that to happen in his career at home at Lambeau Field. Eddie Lacy looks like he's ballooned back up again. I think they're a pretender right now just because something is going on internally, and that scares me.
And Eddie Lacy, as you mentioned, a bit nicked up, questionable for the Packers game next week where they'll play host to the Dallas Cowboys. Was going to ask you about the Arizona Cardinals. Don't think it's worth wasting our time on that particular team until they get things sorted out. So, Payne, I know typically we'll do best win, worst win. I think we've covered that in great detail for a lot of the teams that are on the cusp of either being very good or maybe trending in the wrong direction. But was there anything that you saw on Sunday of Week 5 that really surprised you?
It's the Dolphins. And it's not really a surprise, but something I think we need to touch on. Just no depth whatsoever. Just kind of a mess. We saw yesterday, Brandon Elbert was out. He was supposed to play. Didn't end up suiting up. Laremy Tunsil somehow gets injured. They're claiming it was in warm-ups. I've been told from someone pretty close that they saw him walk into the stadium on crutches. So to be determined on what the heck's going on there. But we've talked about how thin they were. They had to start a reserve left guard at left tackle yesterday. It was just a mess. Tannehill was under pressure all game. Tennessee's defense isn't very good in general. They came in allowing 5.6 yards per play defensively. Miami at home has just 200 total yards of offense. And this is the craziest stat, but Tennessee led their previous three games for a total of 2 minutes and 44 seconds out of 180 possible minutes. You get beat by two touchdowns at home. It's just embarrassing. And I know we talked on it last week about who you thought, or you asked me who I thought was the worst team in the NFL. I said the Dolphins. This team is just scary bad right now.
And, of course, which may as well lead into some of our look-ahead discussion that we always have here on Monday morning, trying to compare what numbers would have been for this week's games going into, had last week's games not taken place. And it's a little bit out of sequence, since you know we like to do things in rotation order. But we may as well start right there with the Dolphins. On a look-ahead number, the Steelers would have been 4-point favorites for their trip down to South Florida. We see the Steelers go out there and absolutely annihilate the Jets. And Miami look like an incompetent bunch of football players. This number goes from the Steelers -4 out to the Steelers a 7.5-point favorite for what normally would consider a bit of a tricky travel situation.
Yeah, it is a tricky travel situation. And then you factor in that 1 p.m. start, a Pittsburgh team that's used to playing in cold weather. Maybe they wear down late. 7.5 is a big number. You get across that key. How vital was that hook on Sunday Night Football? So it's important you get the best of the number. The one thing that scares the heck out of me here, if I was taking Miami, is
everything.
You have your power
numbers. You can say everything scares you about even considering taking the Dolphins moving forward. It doesn't bother me.
You have your power numbers, obviously. You have your spots and your situations. And it's one thing that kind of makes some sports bettors elite is if you have a sense of the game, if you're able to kind of look at matchups, determine what's going to happen on the field. And it scares the heck out of me. This secondary against these receivers of Pittsburgh who are now getting healthy. Coates took that next step. AB still isn't really acclimated into the offense as much as we thought. But this Dolphins secondary is absolutely dreadful. They are going to have a tough time covering Xavien Howard, who was their starting quarterback, the second-round pick out of Baylor. He re-injures the knee. He is out. He was playing, you know, going one-on-one in practice against Kenny Stills. Hurt the MCL. He'll be out 3 to 6 weeks. So this secondary is just decimated. That's not really the team you want to be facing with a bad secondary at this point. But I would envision... who knows if the market can hold this price, but I would envision there being sharp guys on Miami this week.
I think with the number at 7.5, bookmakers have actually done themselves a favor. They now have a little bit of wiggle room to tick up as high as 9.5, much like they did with the Steelers last week. You know you're going to have a ton of money line liability going to the Dolphins as a leg of a parlay, teasers, what have you. And I think this is normally the time of the season, the middle of October, where books have to almost overhaul some of their power rankings for the bad teams because they know they're not going to be able to attract money, you know, outside of a few bucks here and there from the sharp guys, but the public is going to line up on some of these particular sides.
Yeah, no question about it. And it's why I have always said this from the very beginning. And it seems to be something that isn't being said publicly from the sharp guys. They continue to claim they're betting college football for the most amount of money. But I can tell you, the public has their say in the NFL. It's the one market where there's just a ton of recreational money, a ton of bad money, and it forces the books to hang numbers that potentially aren't very accurate. And because of that, there is a lot of value in the NFL, not only from that perspective, but from the perspective of how much money you can get down. Sure, you can go hit 63% on WNBA totals and throughout, you know, 10 different books, you end up with a couple dimes down in the game. But it's much more lucrative in the NFL if you can hit 55, 56, 57, 58% and you have these groups getting down $500,000, $1 million. So the NFL market continues to be king for sports bettors.
Well, that's an interesting point you raise, and this is a little bit more philosophical than we typically get into on the Monday podcast, that betting niche sports, say the WNBA, maybe the CFL or other sports along those lines, you know, I spent a ton of time in the NASCAR market. That's great if you're an individual trying to move a little bit of money. But as you allude to, if you're part of a larger group and a professional moving, let's call it 5, 10, maybe even as high as 20 to 50,000 a game, you don't have those type of options on some of the secondary sports. So you have to allocate your time accordingly to where there's enough liquidity in the market allowing you to try and get down the same way as if you were buying and trading stocks. You can't do this all the time with penny stocks. You need a larger market cap to be able to take full advantage and turn a profit.
Yeah, absolutely. You nailed that head on. And the other interesting thing here is if we talk about the sports betting aspect, wins and losses, you know, figuring out how much you're betting on each game, figuring out how large your edge is. Well, there's another dynamic to this, and it's acquiring outs. It's acquiring places to actually get down. And in the summer months, if you're pummeling your book with WNBA totals and you get dropped and you don't have that outcome football season when you need it the most, it becomes counterproductive.
Yeah, that's you're preaching to the choir here when NASCAR Xfinity gets in the way of you being able to get a softer set of NFL numbers from time to time. Voice you hear on the other end of the line as you do every Monday and Thursday here on Bet the Board podcast, that of Payne Insider. You can follow him on Twitter at Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me on Twitter there as well at Todd Furman. Of course, follow the podcast as well at Bet the Board Pod. Check out the website, bettheboardpodcast.com. Plenty of great merchandise and gear. Other games, Payne, of interest where we've seen the market kind of adjust to 1 week's worth of results. What I think is a fascinating matchup on Thursday night for a number of reasons, knowing how well the Chargers have played the Broncos in the past, knowing that Mike McCoy and company are inventing ways to lose seemingly every single Sunday. Denver look to be a 3-point favorite on a look ahead number. The Chargers open at 2.5 at BetOnline, albeit you have to lay a substantial price. But the Chargers, despite losing all these close games, are they improving their overall power profile?
This San Diego Chargers team seems to have good success against the spread versus the Broncos. This game, for whatever reason, seems to be the one they get up for, the matchup, whatever it might be. They seem to have Denver's number against the spread. So this, again, becomes the must-win when you look at the landscape of the West Division. For me, though, the number's a little short. Still question marks. Is it going to be Simeon? Is it going to be Paxton Lynch? You know, if they get to 5-0, they probably go Paxton Lynch one more time. We'll see how quickly Simeon heals. They claimed he's going to have to be 110% to come back. But all of a sudden, you go to 4-2. Things get a little bit dicey, so that'll be interesting. We see a lot of sports books not open yet, waiting on who will be officially announced as the quarterback. So that's going to be a big component to this game.
110%, though, physically impossible if you want my mathematical assessment there. I'm not sure.
If you just have a little of that green juice I drank before this podcast, you get to 110%.
Yeah, I'm just glad that you're able to do this entire podcast uninterrupted, that don't have to go empty your bottles drinking some of that crap.
Nope. The Cosby kids have remained intact.
It's pretty impressive, buddy. And that's now more biological warfare than a lot of our listeners want to try and hear. Talking about the quarterbacks, though, do you make a change number-wise, Simeon versus Lynch, one and a half point adjustment at this juncture?
That seems to me a touch low right now.
Well, it's interesting how much 1 week can change. And as we talked about throughout the course of the game, Paxton Lynch looked to be about a second late. I've heard some prominent media members calling him a glorified college quarterback right now. Doesn't seem to have the same grasp adjusting to NFL speed. And maybe that's because he spent a little bit more time on the bench and playing against American Athletic Conference opponents.
It's different, right, when you can game plan for a guy than when he gets thrown in the middle of a game. It's a little bit different when you don't game plan for a guy. Simeon goes down against the Bucks, and all of a sudden in comes a guy you didn't scheme for, you didn't see really on tape, you didn't expect to play. All of a sudden you have a full week of preparation, you got a full half from him, and you see some of his limitations. And we talked about this. It's similar to Brock Osweiler. We all want this big statue behind the line of scrimmage, but suddenly you get too tall and the defenders can see your eyes. He's got this elongated throw. It takes time to release it. So he's going to have to work on some things. It's way too early to throw Paxton Lynch into the mix. And for this game, short week, Thursday night football, again, you get more film on him. It's a tough number to lay right now if it's Paxton Lynch.
Okay, another rookie quarterback who finally has the first blemish on his resume after a pretty solid start. I'm not going to take anything away from what I saw from Carson Wentz battling back, facing a 2-touchdown deficit for long stretches on the road against the Detroit Lions. Interesting line movement on this campaign. You saw the Eagles listed as a pick'em on the look-ahead number. Market actually opens at BetOnline, Washington -1.5. You now see the Eagles as a 2-point favorite. You have to lay a bit of a juice trending towards 2.5. Are you surprised that you've seen the market not know exactly where to set the number on these two teams vying for NFC East supremacy?
I'm not sure anybody knows what the Eagles are right now, but I was pretty impressed with them in defeat. You go 3-0, you go into your bye week, you're a little fat and happy. They came out and didn't have their sea legs under them. The defense was off balance for the first time all season, but eventually they, you know, got acclimated to the game. You're not playing a real football game for, you know, a week. And so it took them time to get acclimated. They end up turning things around. They do take the lead. A late turnover kind of hurts them, and the Lions get the big win. But I was pretty impressed with how quickly they were able to flip the switch. This Washington team is dreadful. I know they're 3-2, and we're going to end up losing the goddamn win total on them. But they're not very good. They should have lost yesterday. What the Ravens were doing in the red zone, CJ Mosley decided to go bowling there at the goal line. They didn't deserve to win that game. This Washington team is not very good.
You know, when you go bowling at the goal line, that is a major fine in Todd Furman Kangaroo Court. You better damn well make sure if you're stretching that ball over the goal line from the 1 yard line that you're getting 6, because the alternative of forcing a touchback, especially at a critical juncture of the game, clearly I'm not sure that the reward outweighs the risk in that situation.
Are we going to talk about this?
I mean, I just wanted to get it off my chest, and I got it off my chest so we can move forward.
Well, I received a text message from a guy named Todd Furman yesterday.
I don't want to talk about Jacob Tammy. I don't want to talk about Jacob Tammy.
It said, If I was a coach, if I was a GM, if I was an owner, I would fine anybody who stretched the ball across the goal line and turned it over. Then we fast forward like 20 minutes later and you have Jacob Tammy at tight end because Eric Ebron is out. And the first drive of the game, they go down there. Tammy catches one at the half-yard line, chooses not to stretch it across, and suddenly that tune changed dramatically.
Yeah, well, you know what? I'm not a fantasy guy by any stretch of the imagination, but some of the moves that I elected to make with my team yesterday would put me in the hall of shame. Benching Matthew Stafford in favor of Ryan Tannehill on the more embarrassing side. Benching Ezekiel Elliott in favor of CJ Anderson, ultimately costing a victory. But I don't want to digress. I like to move forward on this podcast. Thank you very much, Payne.
Cowboys, half-ass full kind of guy.
Yeah. Cowboys, Packers, bet online. Your look-ahead number here for the Packers was 6.5. Right now, you're looking at Green Bay, a 4.5-point chalk. I'm not sure if that's because Dallas looked so good against Cincinnati or because Green Bay struggled to find offensive continuity in their win over the Giants.
Both.
Sounds like a cop-out.
Both. No, I mean, Dallas is, you know, looks very good. You get that perception in the defense. I mean, my God, you basically shut a team out with extra prep, had 10 days. And, you know, they score two touchdowns late in garbage time, but for the important parts of that game, the defense looked competent. This is a big revenge game. Dallas probably had this one circled a little bit. It's kind of why we saw some money on Cincinnati in the market, but the last time Dallas traveled to Lambeau Field, they felt like they were jobbed. I would think Dez Bryant tries to give it a go this week.
That was going to be the follow-up question. Does Dez Bryant go out there, even if he only has the use of, let's call it, 1.5 legs? I have to imagine he's suiting up and going out there playing with a chip on his shoulder for this revenge game.
I shouldn't say I know this, but I would think it's likely.
Well, that's good to know and definitely worth factoring into the handicapping. And of course, what's turned into maybe the marquee game of all of Sunday afternoon, aside from Dallas Green Bay, Atlanta on the road for the second straight week to take on another stingy defense in Seattle. The Seahawks come into this game off a bye week. Interestingly enough, Westgate Superbook had a look ahead number here, Seattle -7. BetOnline opens this number a little bit shorter at 5.5, 6, depending on, you know, what time you were checking the number. Are you surprised that you've seen the market have to adjust this much to Atlanta coming off that key number against a very public team in Seattle?
It's tough to say this, but I'm not quite sure. And I know we kind of alluded them on the contender pretender list, but for me, this is also a big game for Seattle. That offensive line has not looked very good, but suddenly you face an Atlanta team, again, one-game anomaly, that hasn't been able to get after the quarterback. So I think that's a matchup that you need to exploit if you're playing Seattle. If Atlanta can't do this, I think it gets a little bit ugly. But I will say this Seattle defense, as good as they are, and it doesn't seem to matter who their defensive coordinator is, and again, right now, number one in defensive efficiency, this will be the game that determines how good this Seattle's defense is, because right now, that number one defensive efficiency ranking has come against Tannehill, Case Keenum, Ryan Fitzpatrick, and Blaine Gabbert. I would think those four could kind of find themselves on some type of spoof Mount Rushmore.
Not exactly a murderer's row of NFL quarterbacks. I should clarify that when I looked at my jumbled up notes here, BetOnline actually opened Seattle a 5.5-point favorite for this game. Number got as high as 7, and it's since settled in at 6 along with the rest of the market. So you have seen, albeit with pretty low limits early in the week, some interesting jockeying for position. Currently sitting at 6. And of course, if you want more in-depth breakdown of any of these particular games, that's what the Thursday podcast is here for. We'll do a deep dive, try and get you all set for a busy weekend. Payne, when you look at the board, and I know we try and do this, tip our hand, maybe a little bit, but not too much. Anything else that we should be looking for early in the week as far as numbers that we think could be on the move?
Well, right now, you're looking at this board, and there's 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, 5 games not really open in the market due to some injuries. So there's not a ton for me right now at this point.
Movie review time. Last week we saw Deepwater Horizon. I know it did all sorts of gangbuster numbers at the box office. And when you look at what the Rotten Tomatoes, IMDb, gave it outstanding ratings. I know I have pretty strong feelings on this particular movie, Payne, but I like to give the floor to you first as the movie connoisseur, since you tell me oftentimes I'm too much of a thinking man when I'm just trying to enjoy 90 minutes of entertainment.
It wasn't as good as I thought it was going to be.
Finally honest. Hold on a second. I'm going to let you continue, and then I'm going to have to hit you with a real, you know, tough question here.
It was an action movie. Didn't love it.
Yes, we know it was an action movie. Thank you.
Didn't love it. I kind of kept waiting for something to happen, for something more to happen. You know, it's like you're in one spot the entire movie. It didn't do it for me. Not great.
Is this the first movie that we reviewed so far this fall that we would tell our listeners if they have something else to do that maybe they should probably pass on seeing this particular flick?
I think you wait for it to get on HBO. I will say this, though. My opinion on this movie is probably poor for the reason that I looked it up on IMDb before I went to the movie, and it got an 8 out of 10. So you go in there with these high expectations, and then poof. you know, if you're dead bored in the middle, you know, in the middle of football season, you just need to get the heck out of the house, get away from the girlfriend. She's driving you freaking nuts. Maybe it's worth the money. But if you're really, you know, trying to conserve your dollars, probably wait for it to come out on HBO.
Are you a big Mark Wahlberg fan in general when it comes to a lot of the movies he's made in the past?
Of late?
Not I mean, great. We can go of late. We can go in general. I mean,
no, in general, great.
Okay.
Italian Job, Boogie Nights, The Departed, Lone Survivor, Three Kings. I think, you know, if you remember early Marky Mark, you get the Basketball Diaries. So for me, you know, this theme of the podcast has been like, what? Old school. I like old school stuff. And you get Mark Wahlberg. This guy's good. The way he could cover those punts, one of the best gunners I've ever seen. So you got to account for something like that. Big Invincible fan. I like Mark Wahlberg.
All right, I just had to check, because I know sometimes we talk about a lot of the marquee actors, and we can either like some TV of the guys and what too. They do. What'd you say?
TV show, too.
True. I mean, Entourage. We know where Entourage fit in. I just wasn't sure if you were going to sit here and tell me you felt like Ted and Ted 2 got jobbed, that they should have somehow won, you know, major movie awards, whether it's an Oscar or an MTV Kids' Choice selection.
I will say this, though. When you can kind of have that broadness, that range where you can go from a Departed, a Lone Survivor, and then to a Ted, it kind of shows how good you are.
Yeah, it's some versatility, kind of like a Swiss Army knife of actors that you don't get pigeonholed into one particular role. It gives you some versatility. When we look at this week's slate of potential movies, I mean, Girl on a Train, we talked about maybe being thrown out there. Birth of a Nation. I mean, we can look at the top movie as far as box office gross this past weekend, but I'm not sure this is in the Payne wheelhouse. Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children. I mean, which direction are we going, buddy?
I'm going to leave it up to you, but I think we're going Girl on a Train. Those other two options,
not quite in the wheelhouse. Not quite in the wheelhouse. All right. Well, I mean, every now and again, I have to throw things out. We can't always stay inside the box. We have to open it up. And given that the movie that we'll be seeing for next Monday's podcast is probably one that you've like waited all summer to try and, or I should say, two Mondays from now that we'll be reviewing, that you waited all summer to see in The Accountant, I feel like I'm going to have to rein you in like a kid on Christmas Eve waiting for that big, massive gift under the Christmas tree.
Cannot wait. Cannot wait.
We'll see what we can try and find there. And last but not least, on the Monday edition of Bet the Board, we would be remiss if we didn't give you a full-scale breakdown of the Monday Night Football Clash of the Titans provided by the American Gaming Association. Check out all of their great information and content, americangaming.org. You can follow them on Twitter, at Ammer, A-M-E-R, Gaming, G-A-M-I-N-G-A-S-S-N. It is the mission of the AGA to be the single most effective champion of the industry, relentlessly protecting against harmful and often misinformed public policies and paving a path for growth, innovation, and reinvestment. Currently, their biggest initiative is going through trying to repeal PASPA. We won't get into some of the specifics this week, but it may be worth a further discussion when we get AGA CEO Jeff Freeman on here to talk about some of the things they're working towards. Bucks-Panthers tonight, Payne. We've seen this number go all over the place. Right now at BetOnline, you're looking at Carolina, a 5.5-point favorite, total of 46. Before we even get into the actual handicap of this, what now amounts to a very pivotal NFC South matchup, injury concerns. No Cam Newton for Carolina. No Jonathan Stewart in the backfield. Tampa without Charles Sims, without Doug Martin, Gerald McCoy, Noah Spence. Where do we even start to go when we break down this particular matchup?
This is a tough one. I think the big thing here is, what does Jameis Winston do against this defense? We know there's going to be some opportunity there. Panthers are going to get after him. He has not looked good with pressure in his face to date. There are going to be some opportunities, though, if they can keep him upright, where he's going to be able to find his slew of big targets deep down the field. And that's going to be the thing here. On the flip side of that, this Panthers team, they're a physical football team. They want to be able to run it. They haven't really been able to do that with Jonathan Stewart. He hasn't provided, with the loss of him, there's just no physical ground game. Cam Newton out, we talk about him in the red zone and why they're so efficient scoring touchdowns. When you have him and Jonathan Stewart paired, it's tough to stop them on the ground. Both those guys are out. When you look at the Bucs defense, as bad as the secondary's been, is Derek Anderson going to be able to move them through the air, simply because this Bucs defense is great against the run? Number three, allowing 3.3 yards per rush attempt. So Derek Anderson is going to have to make plays in this game.
Do we agree with what the market says about Cam Newton's value? I mean, the number at 5.5, where it currently sits, what would this number be with Cam out there, given the current state of these two teams? Are we talking about dead zone 7.5, where books go, you know what, market, you take it with where you want to go, because we know perception is down on the Bucs, given the way they were boat raced by Denver and have really struggled since their opener against Atlanta. Meanwhile, Carolina could be an opportunity to buy stock at an all-time low, given Carolina getting torched a week ago by the Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah, I think with Cam Newton, you're looking at the potential of just putting this in the dead zone, figuring out where the market goes. You figure there's probably going to be a lot of teasers attached to this, the Monday night game. But right now, Derek Anderson, he showed the ability, and he has shown the ability, to move an offense. He might actually be the better passer of the two. Cam Newton wasn't playing very efficiently to this point in the season. So I think we got a glimpse of Derek Anderson, you know, kind of propelling a comeback in Atlanta. It fell short with a mistake, and that's kind of what Derek Anderson is. He's going to eventually make that mistake. Are the Bucs going to be able to capitalize on that mistake at some point in the evening? And for me right now at 6, it's tough for me to lay it, simply because you expect Derek Anderson to make a mistake, and there is the potential there with that secondary for Carolina that the Bucs are able to hit him on a big play or two, and I think it's going to be tough to cover a number if one or both of those things happen.
Winner of this game relevant in talk of winning the division, while the loser we can kind of eliminate and write off. We're a little bit premature for both those things.
I think it's a little premature. Obviously, if Tampa Bay wins this game, it's a huge victory. They have the tiebreaker over Atlanta, so even though it would be a two-game lead, at this point they'd have the tiebreaker. They have another game against them. If Carolina loses this, it's going to be a lot tougher, simply because they don't have the tiebreaker against Atlanta, so it becomes nearly a four-game advantage for the Falcons. So this is the must-win for the Panthers, absolutely no doubt about it. You feel like whoever loses this probably out of the running.
And I know I shouldn't put words in your mouth, but to quote the great Kenny Rogers, sometimes you have to know when to hold them, when to fold them, when to walk away, when to run. Does this game fall into that class? Better opportunities, it'll be out there on the board rather than forcing an investment in tonight's game.
You know, I'm going to spend a ton of the rest of my day on this game, talking to people, breaking this down a little bit more. And this is kind of a teaching point in this. Right now, we crushed college football the last two Saturdays. Thank God it's finally coming around. But I'm 2-2 in the NFL this week, and I'm down juice, obviously. I could obviously force a play here, go to 3-2, but to me it's about the overall picture of the season, and so I'm willing to potentially take a losing week and not force a play on the Monday night game just to have a winning week. So that tells you how much I don't like this game currently.
There's sometimes the best opportunities you find in betting is just to pass and wait for greener pastures. It's the one thing you'll get with Bet the Board every single week, guys. We're not here to try and force winners, give you a bailout game necessarily. If we're not investing, we'll never give it out on the air, and it's important for you guys to remember. There are other podcasts out there who claim to want to give you 5-10 games a weekend. That's not what you're going to get here, and it's not a strategy or a long-term investing process that either Payne or I subscribe to.
No, never will. I went on the little rant last podcast about that. There's a lot of guys, and I would say 95% of the guys you're getting information from probably aren't betting themselves.
And we'll tell you when we win around here in Bet the Board country. We'll tell you when we lose. Fortunately, able to get to the window with the Buffalo Bills, beating the market by a couple of points on Sunday. And if naturally, If you take Monday off, we'll be right back here Thursday with more great NFL analysis, breaking down all the marquee games. Follow Payne on Twitter, at Payne Insider. Follow me there as well, at Todd Furman. And most importantly, follow the podcast, at Bet the Board Pod, for all the updates, great content, articles, you name it. Plenty of things to get you to the window. We'll look forward to our weekly chat with Dave Mason. I think you'll be a little bit surprised by what he has to say about how Saturday went for the house and what Sunday looked like with public sides coming in the form of the New England Patriots and Pittsburgh Steelers. But in the meantime, best of luck with all of your wagering pursuits. Enjoy the Major League Baseball playoffs, and we'll be right back here with you Thursday morning for Bet the Board Podcast Edition as we break down all things Week 6, and hopefully we'll see you at the window.